Feeding Matters understands the significant financial difficulty that comes with supporting a loved one with pediatric feeding disorder, or PFD, and avoidant restrictive food intake disorder, or ARFID. Each fall, we open the Family Assistance Program. Since 2019, we've awarded $40,000 to families throughout the United States. Applications for the 2025 cycle are currently being accepted and are due Friday, October 10th. Feeding Matters will award $1,000 grants to 10 families. Learn more and apply today at feedingmatters.org/family-assistance. That's feedingmatters.org/family-assistance.
Hey everyone, welcome to Feeding Does Matter. It is a very special episode because it's our first anniversary. Happy first anniversary, Haley, my very special co-host.
happy first anniversary to Feeding Does Matter.
Yes, Feeding Does Matter has been with everybody for a full year now. It definitely was something that I don't think Haley or I ever considered really doing until our consortium project team pushed us to think about it in this way. But I'm really glad we've done this, Haley. It's been a very cool year trying to figure out what is Feeding Does Matter and what do we need to do with it, and I guess just all the things. What's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I'm super grateful for the experience, and I'm super glad that they pushed us. Nudged. They just gently
nudged us. We were like, everybody's got a podcast.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's something that we ever would have just said, hey, let's do a podcast. But I am very glad that we have done this. I think it's been fantastic.
I agree. And it really is a representation of what we wanted the consortium to be too. So it's almost an extension of the consortium in being able to shed a light on what does it look like to be inclusive of the lived experience in research from the very beginning. And so I feel like it's only appropriate that it came from the consortium and the work of the consortium in launching something like this.
Right. I'm so glad that we get to share this co-learning experience more broadly to whoever whoever would be interested in joining us for it.
That's so true. Because co-learning is such a pillar of, as we've learned within BACORI, of like, it's not just the professionals teaching our consortium members about the state of PFD research, but also our subject matter experts and project team learning from consortium members about lived experience and how that can impact and change and adapt their work as well. So
exactly.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. As professionals, there's so much to be learned from those who experience conditions every day.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I agree. Well, we have a bunch of thank yous to get to, but I guess before we do that, Haley, something that just popped in my mind was like, now that we're a year into this and have our footing a little bit, where do you kind of envision us going from here? I know we always want to stay true to the core of why we created Feeding Does Matter and really shedding that light on lived experience. But what are your thoughts about where we need to take it next? I know I'm putting you on the spot.
Like who we might want to speak with or?
Yeah, or any of it. I mean, we've asked the same question to all of our guests about like, what are the barriers and the solutions? We might want to speak with where else we need to spend more time in the research.
Yeah, I think that, well, I know that we've hinted at this before, but I think we might be looking more towards the ethics. And
that will be a big topic of conversation, I think, for us in this podcast.
Yeah, the issues to be encountered. And I'd also like to see us have some conversations with people that just people doing different things in research.
Do you mean like just to bring awareness to some research that's happening that people might not be aware of?
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. No, I get that. Because I think that I found this when I was engaging with the research world that, like, I think I had like a baseline understanding of what research was. And then as you got deeper, you kind of just realized, oh, there's actually like 20 layers to this onion. And so while you may sit in one silo, there's so much more to experience and lean into.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think like after we discussed following the last psych summit, there's so much, you know, in this, in like the borderlands between the silos, mm-hmm. I think it'd be interesting to explore more how we can break down those perceived barriers and learn more how they're more permeable, right? Or how we have a lot more in common and where we can find those soft spots and start to integrate work more.
Yeah. Yeah. Quickly. Really focusing on kind of the collaborative aspect of research.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I'd like to start by, you know, establishing what we have in common more and, you know, move right through talking about how we're different and get right more into, okay, this is what we have in common and go.
Right, right. Because that, I mean, ultimately, we're trying to get the field to progress and we still have so much work to do in the field.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we found some of our themes.
It's like we're getting to a point where it's like, yes, silo. Now, come on, let's go.
You're like ready to go.
Yeah, I'm ready.
That's so funny, Haley, because I feel like you and I are different in the sense that like you are way more methodical and I'm like the like, yeah, let's do it type of approach. But like, I think in research, I get really intimidated. I'm like, okay, do we need to go slower? All those things.
Well, I feel like we can start to, yes, I do feel like there is a lot of, you know, like things are in a lot of different containers. But yeah. I feel like we can definitely start to make those connections.
Mm-hmm. Making connections and collaborating to further the field. That sounds like a great thing to be thinking about for the next year of this podcast or longer. And so I think maybe we just get into what we wanted to do before we get to our guests for today. I guess first, we are so grateful to all of you who are listening to this podcast, whether you join us every once in a while based on what guest or topic you see, or if you're a consistent listener and are always there to make sure that we get some of those downloads and listens. We just are so appreciative of you taking the time to hear us and our guests talk about what we need to do to make sure lived experience and research are top of mind together. And so huge thank you to all of our listeners out there. With that being said, the consortium is the reason this podcast exists. So our family-centered PFD research consortium, which was launched because of our contract with PCORI as a capacity expansion for research in the field. So we have so much gratitude to our consortium members. It is a group of 20, and later on in this time together, you're going to be able to hear from three of the leaders of the consortium in their reflections of the consortium, as well as the consensus meeting on priorities for research in lived experiences perspective. And so huge, huge thank you to our consortium members.
And then, of course, we'd like to thank our project team. So these are the people that helped us in, you know, running the project. And so thank you so much to our project team.
Yeah, I think the members really appreciated their expertise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this was the people that Jacqueline and I worked with, the subject matter experts. So thank you to all of them. And then thank you to all of our previous guests on Feeding Does Matter on our podcast.
Yeah.
And there have been so many. How many episodes have we had, Jacqueline?
Well, we do an episode every week. I think we may have taken a break or two during like a holiday.
Yeah.
So we had probably maybe 48, 50 guests, something like that would be my guess, but I don't know for sure. But it's definitely a lot. And we've been so interested in all of the conversations. And a lot of conversations have been with our project team and our consortium members, but we've had a lot of additional guests that have just come on to either share their story or their research work.
Yeah. And some of those first few episodes were really those training modules that we had converted into episodes. And then we really got rolling with.
And then had to learn how to be podcasters.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's true. But you know who helped us do that, Haley? And this is our last shout out is our wonderful producer and editor and director of awareness and partnerships at Feeding Matters, Tamia Scott. And so, Tamia, we are just so grateful to everything you've done to help us make this podcast a success. I think we would still be basically like doing this over Zoom and trying to figure out how we would push this out to the world if it wasn't for you. So we're so grateful to you for helping us share this information more broadly.
Thank you so much, Maria.
Yeah, we really couldn't do it without you. So thank you, everyone, for making it a year with us. We hope to bring you more of what you're interested in. Please know you can always reach out to us to share any ideas or anything that you want to share to make this podcast better. We are always open to feedback. That's just inherent to Feeding Matters in general. So please know that that extends to this podcast as well. And so without further ado, just huge thank you and happy anniversary. And Haley and I are going to kick it to ourselves where we talk with the consortium leaders.
Presented by Feeding Matters with host Jacqueline Peterson and Dr. Haley Estrom.
Feeding does matter.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Feeding Does Matter. We have a very, very special episode today. It is our first anniversary podcast. So I'm Jacqueline Peterson, CEO of Feeding Matters.
And I'm Haley Estrom. I'm an associate professor in the School of Nursing at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington.
And we're really excited to be here with all of you today. This podcast was born out of our family-centered PFD research consortium. And so today we have on three of the leaders of the consortium. So we've got Rachel, Christina, and Elizabeth with us today to talk about not only how the consortium got started, but also this journey to really identifying what are the research priorities that the consortium has for the field of PFD and ARFID and feeding differences and disorders to really pay attention to and to really think about as where the research needs to go. And then what the future of the consortium and their engagement in research looks like. So super excited to have you all. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Yes, very happy to be here.
Thank you.
So I start every meeting with like a check-in. And so I feel like because this is like our Friday meetings that we have. So let's just check in. How's everybody showing up today? Maybe just one word with our podcast time together today.
So I would say intrigued.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Intrigue?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
I would say... This is Christina. I would say enthusiastic.
Nice.
Oh, man. Go to Haley next.
Haley, what's your word?
Kind of a hyphenated word.
There you go. Find your loopholes.
Family-centered care.
Yeah, nice.
Double hyphen.
I would just say, honestly, excited. I'm excited.
Rachel, that was going to be my word, too. So
anytime we get together.
Grateful.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one, too.
Yeah, because I am excited. It's been so great to be able to even share with like partners in different meetings about the work of the consortium. But anytime that we get to broadcast it in a bigger venue, it really makes me very excited. So grateful to have all of you here.
I changed my word.
You changed your word?
Surprised.
Surprised. All right.
I mean, I can't believe we did a podcast and it's already been a year.
It is kind of crazy how fast time has gone. Like, you kind of blink and you miss some of it.
You really do. Yeah, that's so true. Well, for this first year anniversary episode, we thought we would cover some of the things that we had gone over in previous podcast episodes and sessions that were applicable to what we wanted to talk about today. So first, we're going to talk about how the idea of even the Family-Centered PFD Research Consortium, what that was. And so a huge shout out to Dr. Haley Estrom for bringing this idea forward to Feeding Matters to even be thinking about this. You know, we've talked about what does it look like to make sure parents and caregivers are at the table in this work. And that's something that's been core to Feeding Matters for so long. But the way that that happens or how that happens looks many different ways. And so Haley had this idea and was like, Jacqueline, we've got to do this. And I was like, okay, I'm on board. Let's do this. And so we were grateful enough to receive a contract from the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute Eugene Washington PCORI Engagement Award. And that allowed us to get the seed funding to begin to look at this work. And so the idea behind the consortium was essentially this, that there is the challenge in the field is that there is a lack of patient and family engagement in research. And therefore, while we've seen a lot of research increase in this area, we've seen a lot more ARFID research, we've seen a lot more PFD research, it often doesn't reflect the needs and perspectives of those directly affected, that lived experience. Right. And so our solution to that was establishing, or at least one solution, there needs to be many, of course, but the one solution that we felt like we could have control over was establishing the Family-Centered PFD Research Consortium to serve as a meaningful collaboration between patient and family stakeholders, researchers, and clinicians in the field. And so the goal with this, the original idea was to empower and prepare families to actively partner in research, enabling them to continue their unique perspectives to grow the research field. And we felt like by placing patient and family stakeholders at the research table and equipping them with the necessary skills, knowledge, and resources, that the consortium could bridge the existing gaps in research and build capacity for future research. And so the thing that Haley and I continue to mention when we tell people about the consortium is that we want patients and families to remain at the center of the research process and going beyond being mere subjects of the study. And so we hope that this will create that sustainability. Did I miss anything from any of you in terms of like how we talked about the original idea of the consortium? And I know we'll get into, you know, how it's evolved and how you all have now have your own governance.
Oh, I think you got it all.
What did you all think about when we first announced the idea? Did it make sense? Was it just like this, you know?
I had no clue what I was signing up for. I was like, oh, this is cool. Lived experience. Like, I'll do it. Like, that's great. And then when we like met the first time, I was like, I had no clue what I signed up for, but I'm here for it. And then I've just been kind of along for the ride ever since. I mean, I think that's one of the fascinating things about Feeding Matters is that you guys take an idea, and because you have so many amazing minds that are involved, it just like shoots out like a firework almost, but it doesn't dissipate. It just keeps going. And so you like catch lights through people, and you can just kind of navigate that in such a way. So like for me, I was like, this is scary. This is new. And I have to meet a bunch of new people. Not sure how I feel about it. But then like getting into it, I'm like, I can't imagine my life without most of you guys. Like, I don't know where I would be without you all. So it's just cool to see where we started versus where we're at now and like where we're going.
I think it was really exciting to see the collaboration coming together, being a part of Feeding Matters in different ways through the years, and watching where the concept came from of bringing families together, bringing professionals together to really move mountains in a field that just really didn't exist in the beginning. And now to have the opportunity to not just collaborate in discussion, but collaborate in research and things that are going to continue to move mountains far beyond the discussion was just so exciting. And I was excited to be a part of it. I felt like it was just like this amazing opportunity to see where when you've walked through something with, when you've had the lived experience and you've walked through something and it's been really hard, you want to ensure that the next person that walks through it, that it's better for them. And this is a really powerful way to do that.
That's really well said. Yeah. I would say for me, when I first heard about this as an advocate, I really felt and still feel that Feeding Matters is a pioneer in this field in bringing the family and person, you know, centricity to research and to the table. So that was something I definitely wanted to be a part of.
So glad that you are.
Like, our meetings always get emotional. I can't believe we're only like 8 minutes in and I'm already like water-eyed. You are all just so inspirational. That should have been my word. Well, thank you all. I think that Haley and I, and speak for I'm not trying to speak for you, Haley, but I think in figuring out like what this would look like, I think we just had like an idea on paper and we couldn't have ever figured out what that would look like going forward. And I think that you all have by and largely exceeded anything we could have expected or even dreamt of for what this looked like. So
I think that you say things very well, Jacqueline. Truly.
All right. So before we get into some of the pieces with the leadership of the consortium, Haley, I thought it might just be good to touch on like what patient and family-centered work is. And it's just a term that is trying to be brought into healthcare more. And so thought it would be important to really touch on it. Do you want to share a little bit?
Yeah. And what I'm looking at when I share this, I lean on the Institute for Patient and Family-Centered Care a lot. And they have actually had some of their initiatives funded also by PCORI. So we have some things in common with them. Some of the core concepts of patient and family-centered care are respect and dignity, information sharing, participation, and collaboration. So when we hear these words, they all sound like very good things, right? These are things we would want for our care with our loved ones and for ourselves. But to go into those terms a little bit more, let me just share what they mean in terms of patient and family-centered care. So respect and dignity, what that is supposed to mean as a core concept of patient and family-centered care is that healthcare practitioners listen to and honor patient and family perspectives and choices. Patient and family acknowledge values, or patient and family knowledge, values, beliefs, and cultural backgrounds are incorporated into the planning and delivery of care. So, and then for information sharing, healthcare practitioners communicate and share complete and unbiased information with patients and families in ways that are affirming and useful. So not just in a way that isn't understood or just a one-off, but it's affirming and useful. Patient and families receive timely, complete, and accurate information in order to effectively participate in care and decision-making. And then for the concept of participation, patients and families are encouraged and supported in participating in care and decision-making at the level that they choose. So they are choosing to participate at the level that they want. Okay. So they're not being forced to participate in any particular level. They're choosing. That's their choice. And then for collaboration, patients, families, healthcare practitioners, and healthcare leaders collaborate in policy and program development, implementation, and evaluation, in facility design, in professional education, and in research. Mm-hmm. Ding, ding, ding. As well in the delivery of care. So, and that's where we come in.
That is.
All right.
As Haley's sharing those, any reaction from leaders on that of the consortium?
I think I always go back to collaboration. I think it's one of the most important pieces as a professional and as a person with lived experience, because when I have a patient walk into my room, mm-hmm. like, I don't know everything about them. There's no way I can possibly know everything about them. And I don't know what they have already gone through, and I don't know what they're currently going through. Mm-hmm. And so them being able to communicate that in whatever way that's important for them to give me that information. And you can't just treat somebody off of like that silo, right? You have to really start to look at the whole picture, the whole person, the whole family, and encapsulate that. So when that collaboration piece comes into play, I'm always thinking about that, because especially where I'm currently at work-wise, like I'm constantly connecting with other professionals and like, how do I support this family? How do I do this? You know, I just collaboration in general is a multi-way road. You can go multiple directions and you need to encapsulate everybody.
Mm-hmm. And we, yeah. And so clinically speaking, there had been research done in the feeding space that showed there wasn't a lot of collaboration being done for feeding. But there also weren't many research studies at all that had been done where families were part of the design.
Hmm. Yeah. I think a big part of that design that speaks to me too would be choice, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that needs more attention and more weight when we talk about designing, you know, what someone's hair looks like, right? Preferential, just design, you know, and what their values are. So choice is really big for me.
So let's talk a little bit about how the consortium got started and the governance and self-governance that you all did. So we launched the idea of the consortium in January 24, and that was when we kind of put out the call for anyone who was interested, and there was an application process that everybody went through, and then the consortium members were selected by the project team that was responsible for making sure the consortium like had kind of a good research backing and was a supportive entity for the consortium as they were working on developing their own governance and ideas and how they wanted to engage in research. And so by March of 24, everyone was selected and accepted to join and started their onboarding process. And then May was when you all started diving into really developing your own governance. So maybe let's talk a little bit about what that process was. And I know it's hard to kind of like pick, and I think you all expressed this too, that was kind of hard to pick a governance when you didn't really know and have a footing of where you were at yet. So that may be a lesson learned for us in this.
I think it was also a challenge because we didn't know each other. So like we all, the people that volunteered, there was a good chunk of us that volunteered. And like when we met the first time, it was like, so what do we do? Right. And I think if I remember right, Elizabeth was like, well, we could like model it off of like other Feeding Matters things. And then David kind of jumped in with his thought. And so we like made this Word document and just kind of all started like putting different thoughts in. And you know, at the time it was really functional and it was great, but then we were like, okay, well, we made this, now what do we do with it aspect? But I would say the starting of it for sure was challenging because we really had no clue what we were building, and what foundational blocks we needed to have in place to be successful. I don't know, Christina, what do you think?
I loved the process. I absolutely loved it because it was like a hypothetical, like, mm-hmm. what is it that you want to see and how do you want this, you know, like an ideal. So that was really exciting. And I love people. I love meeting and connecting and working with people. So, and I think it was really neat how the folks that volunteered in the beginning, they're really still our core folks, responsibility wise, engagement wise. So it was neat to see over the past nearly 2 years now, I can't believe that, to see how that has been a constant. But I really enjoyed it.
Oh, I love that. And I think your points about not knowing each other, like you all got to know each other in that process. So it was kind of like sink or swim for you all in that sense. And I know it was a really tall task. And so just on Haley and my side with the members of the consortium, we have like these deadlines that we have to follow. And so I think that was probably really intimidating too, if I had to guess.
Yes. I'd also say it was like, it's, you know, it's kind of like a group project where you don't know if your group is going to go well or not, like where you're assigned it in college or in high school and you're like put together with this group of people that you may or may not know. And you're like, all right, cool. We can do this. Like we all have a common goal. We all want to get an A, right? So like we want to get this document done and we want it to fit what we want it to fit.
Yeah.
And like we got to really know and like build connections and build friendships and build like just a space where we could all be ourselves truly and like unmask. I feel like a lot of us throughout our day have to mask hard, depending on the situation. And so just being able to just be uniquely you and not worried about whether or not like, oh, if I make this edit, will it hurt someone's feelings? It was more so just like, oh, what if we did this and this? And so it was just nice to build layers of ideas on top of each other.
Yeah, you all were so supportive of each other and continue to be so supportive of each other and like a safe space for each other. And I think that's something really beautiful because of this world ebbs and flows and the challenges that everybody's going through ebbs and flows too. And you all have been able to support each other through those peaks and valleys. And that was something too that like Haley and I think for a lesson for us was we started the consortium. And then as we started seeing everybody do their introductions and some of that, we realized we need actually way more trauma-informed support for these meetings than we currently have in place. And so that was something that like Haley saw it on a few of the members' faces when we were doing our introductions even. And we were like, and she clocked it right away and was like, we need to like build it way more scaffolding for these conversations because we know they will be activating. So that governance happened. And then we moved into research training. And that's kind of how that like this podcast got started. So we'll kind of fast forward over that piece of this. But then we started doing the research prioritization. So would love to hear initial thoughts about what that was like from your guys' perspective.
I would say that a lot of ideas, right? Everyone has ideas. And when you come from a place where you are close to the work, the ideas are important, right? They're important to every person. They're important to the whole member group. I would also say that similarly to kind of the triggering, right, of some of the discussions. You know, I think that sometimes that the prioritization was it was an emotional process, I guess is what I want to say. It was an emotional process, but I do think that we all came together. I do think that we did it in a supportive way and we had the common goal, right? We all had that pie in the sky. We kept that focus. So I would say that the whole entire process was supportive. It was emotional, but I think that when it was all completed, we really felt good about where it landed.
Yeah, kind of piggybacking off of that, like when we kind of came to the thought of like doing the subgroup pieces and allowing like more of that connectivity where people could have a smaller group to discuss their thoughts and ideas of like where they want their priorities to be. I think that was really important because if we would have stayed in that large group, I don't think that people would have felt as comfortable and confident to share their thoughts. I think it also allowed us time to support individuals a little bit more when they're talking about things that are hard for them because the the point of creating these research priorities is to talk about the things that aren't working as well as they should in our respected fields and in the fields that patients are going into with feeding differences and disorders. And so when you're looking at that, and we're coming up with these like ideas and questions and themes, like a big portion of it that I did was like take everything that everybody had written down and like looked at what connected between the three groups and then put them into question format. And while you're doing that, you're making sure you're still listening to the person that's telling their story so you can encapsulate that idea and that thought process and emotion that goes into it while still putting it in a, like a research formatted question, which is really challenging. But I would say, kind of similar to what Christina said, the emotion that was there was so substantial. I mean, even as like my lived experience and another member's lived experience, like there were tears in my group. I'm sure there were tears that were shed in other groups too, because these are things that are drastically important to us. And they are things that we want to change for the long term, not the short term. And so really making sure that as new parents are coming up with kiddos who may be presenting with feeding differences, that they have better access to resources than we did when we were going through that immediate journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rachel, do you want to share the three different groups?
Oh, yeah. So we had patient-centered, where their focus was coming from the lens of the person that's receiving the treatment, whether that be from physician, therapist, any of those things. And we had our family-centered, where that was focusing more on where, from a parent, sibling, grandparent perspective, like primary caregiver perspective, should we push research? And then we had more of like that professional like team approach, where we have anybody else that might be a part of the team, whether that be an educator, a therapist, a speech therapist, occupational therapist, mental health, all of the medical team aspect of it. And so when we divided into these groups, we truly had like a nice balance of each, where a lot of our lived experience people have gone into the fields of helping and supporting people with feeding differences and disorders because of their experience. And so we were able to kind of separate the groups so people still had what they preferred to talk about, but also had like a nice balance between the three. And so when they separated into those three groups, we were able to come at them from different lenses, but it was really fascinating to see at the end of it, a lot of our priorities were all the same across the board.
I think that something to think about and that has been that we're showing is that we're trying to really demonstrate bringing everyone to the table together. And the reality is that when you have the lived experiences, there's going to be emotions, and there might be something that might be more difficult at one moment that isn't at the next. But I think that, and I think that's also dependent on where you're at in your journey. But I think having the ability to all come together, even when it's hard and difficult, and have those conversations, and of course there's support. And that was something that was really wonderful to have, is that we had support pieces, rather that was peer to peer or professionals that stepped in to help. But I think having those hard conversations and not avoiding them was what helped move things forward. And I think the other side or piece of this is for professionals too, that there's a vulnerability that they're having and that they're bringing. And I think for the professionals to be able to say, sometimes it's really hard on us because you're looking for an answer and we don't have one. And this is a vulnerable space for us as well. So it's not just that families or people with lived experiences are vulnerable or emotional and therefore shouldn't be included, but the reality is the providers are too. And when we can just come together and say, look, none of us are perfect, but all of us bring an expertise and we're all going to work together, that's when things move forward. And I think that was something that was really powerful that was presented here. And I think some of that came in the prioritization, some of that came in the week to week, some of that came in the small groups. And so I just think, don't shy away because you think a family might be too emotional or too triggered. Because the other thing is the families and these people, they're very resilient. And that's what we've seen. And they're passionate and they want to move this field forward.
Beautifully said. That was beautiful.
Thanks, Rachel.
Yeah, so many of us shaking our heads in agreement with you, Elizabeth. And I think that's the power of this group. And I think something that Haley and I were so excited in having the three of you on to be able to share directly from you all how you're feeling about this and how you're thinking about this and what the future of the field could look like with voices like yours at the table and leading the projects and being a part of the projects and being at the start of these projects. As we kind of go forward in the prioritization process, there was, just to kind of overview it, there were the three groups that turned into different questions that were identified. And then we also, from Feeding Matters end, brought other kind of, like, we call them cookie list items to consider mm-hmm. for research and put that as part of the group. And the project team put their questions in too. And it made this big list of 120 questions, and that got narrowed in two different ways, in a meeting and then in a formal survey. And then it was time for a smaller group to get together and really do a full day session together with six consortium members and the project team. And so maybe some feelings or thoughts from that meeting, or maybe even surprises that came out of that meeting for you all.
I think that meeting was super anxiety, like, beforehand, because one, you're finally meeting people in person after being online for such a long time, and two, just not knowing what to expect truly. I think when you bring together as many amazing minds as we had in that room, it was so fascinating to watch how people's thought processes worked and to, like, hear and to see the confidence in, like, our members that were present be able to kind of, like, speak up and say, no, we don't agree with this, or we do agree. And then to have that respect from the project team to kind of go, we're here to support you. So what is it that you guys are wanting? We're going to give you the logistics. We're going to give you all of these aspects, but we're also not going to tell you exactly what to do. And I think that was a space where we all were kind of like, oh, we're in charge. Like, how do we navigate this? How do we take the next step, and how do we push forward? And so I think for me, the biggest surprise was, like, truly feeling like an expert when I left that room at the end of our meeting. Like, I was like, all right, like, I am the expert. I know what I'm talking about. I know what my experiences were. And feeling that support from everybody else that was present in that meeting.
I would say that the experience, to echo what Rachel had just said, it was validating. It was an opportunity, I think, to model what coming together at the table was, what it could be and what it was, right? So I think that was a great opportunity to come together, to work collaboratively, to share ideas and opinions in a way that was respectful and safe, even when those opinions did differ. So I thought that it was really meaningful. The experience was meaningful, but again, it was validating that we are the experts. We were given quite a bit of respect in our thoughts and how we shared them. So I would say the overall experience was really meaningful.
Yeah, I would agree. It was a very positive meeting. It was neat to see such a large collaboration of people come together that had so many different experts and from different angles and different lenses, and to be able to have that all in one place. And to have so much listening happening. So that was really empowering to just be heard from all, from whether you were a professional or you were someone with lived experience. I think it was neat that we were able to utilize the different technologies to bring people together from all over, whether they were in person or they were distant, and show that you can still collaborate in many different ways. So I thought that was a very intuitive piece of what we did. Rachel talked earlier about having the small groups and the breakouts, and being able to talk as a large group and get all the perspectives, and then being able to have some really personal dialogue was empowering.
Yeah. And I think while it was generally very positive for all of us, I think there was so much co-learning that happened. And there's a difference between it being positive, but still going through hard and challenging conversations, because I think you can get on the other side of a really difficult conversation to a better understanding between different people in a meeting. And in this case, especially like a lot of the subject matter experts that are coming in as healthcare professionals, and you all really being able to sit at the table eye to eye, power differential out the window, and say and really be able to speak your truth and what you've experienced and what words and what those words have an impact and what are the things that you need to be able to have your healthcare professionals understand about your lived experience in a way that they're taking that into the research. And I feel like it's always really to it really important to acknowledge the process, because you all spoke about the positivity of that meeting, and it was very positive, and there was so much respect in the room. And I think it, to Christina's point, it was such a great example of what we want to see in the field of what the collaboration looks like, what the co-learning looks like, and all of that. It didn't mean it wasn't hard, though. And there were definite hard pieces, not only just emotional pieces, but really hard conversations to get us to be able to listen to one another, understand what we're trying to say or what we are saying or what the impact of what we're saying has, and where does that get us on the other side? So I just wanted to acknowledge that it took everybody really leaning in to get us there. You all landed in such a great spot. So I'm so happy to hear that you came out of it feeling so good about it and feeling like your expertise was honored and valued. And I think you all did such a great job of really identifying what do you all as a consortium need to share in terms of priorities for the field and where the field needs to go.
I think there were good conversations too around the idea that there is a healthcare system in place that all of us have to navigate. Okay. And the professionals that have all of the best intents still have this thing that they have to navigate. And then when they begin to think about research, they have a lens that they're thinking about it through because of that system and because of how research works, how best practices work, how funding works, and all of that. And so there's like this automatic mindset. And then from the lived experience side, we're trying to enter into that space, and we're coming with our lens into that space of like, yeah, we hear that the system's in place, but this system is as we all know, broken, but it's really creating barriers for care. And seeing that the lived experience is saying, look, here are some other ideas and some other things that could really help, and not having that full understanding of how research and funding, all that comes together, was able to bring new and fresh ideas to then meet with people who do understand that and say, hey, maybe there is a way to break through. Maybe there is something we can do differently to merge these pieces together. And I think that in and of itself can be a hard conversation, because you're saying, look, I understand, but this is what a family really needs. This is what a person really needs. And having to advocate, even within that setting, feeling like you're just constantly advocating, can be weary and hard and tiring. But again, it goes back to modeling what's happening, like that is what's happening every day in clinicians' offices as well. And then I think too, there was some movement again on both sides of the lived experience, understanding that structure and how difficult that is for a professional. But there were some professionals that also really seemed to indicate that they hadn't looked through these other lenses and it would change the way they practice. And that's really powerful too.
Seeing the fact that the subject matter experts could and did have an open mind, and that they did openly share how maybe their perspective and the way in which they approached their care had changed or will change, that was really empowering.
And when there was a discussion where it was hard, or where there were barriers, or where there was a disagreement on something that seems small, like a word, but that is actually really important, or a term, or when it was a really big thing of just a larger item that that was not agreed upon. Again, it came back to people were respected, voices were heard, and the outcome mattered, but the process mattered way more than the outcome in that situation.
Oh, that's so true. The outcome did matter, but the process mattered more.
For sure.
Yeah. And not to pivot too quickly to outcomes. And for those listeners out there, you know, we will be able to share this publication as the consortium writes it and publishes it, and they will be presenting on it at Feeding Matters' upcoming conference in February. But so we'll just have to talk to it lightly. What were important things for you in the process and in the outcome of where the priorities landed and felt?
So, I mean, there was the big discussion around the difference between mental health versus supports versus causality of where pediatric feeding differences come from. And I think, so person and family-centered care and support, and what that looks like from supporting the trauma and the emotion and those experiences is not going to be answered in general mental health. And so I think it's important to look at that there are different ways to support families, and what families and the persons are saying is that the support.
Well, and acknowledging the trauma and the history and what kind of led you, like what the journey looks like, and being able to make that part of the care too, is what I was hearing a lot of.
I think that there's, you know, trauma-informed care is really important, and having that understanding that that is true, and going into it that way. I think what we were hearing from the family groups was it would go back to an older school of thought around cause and blame and shame and bias. So a provider coming in and having that bias and that thought, and then dismissing valid concerns, thinking that they're just associated with an anxious mom or an anxious dad or an anxious child, I guess we should say anxious caregiver, and starting from that lens and that direction, and thinking that cause comes from that way. That was a big discussion and a big point and has affected a lot of care. And so then when you walk into a provider's office that doesn't have that lens maybe, or that bias, or has been more trained and informed, then you have a different experience, but the family has already been through so much that they're coming in maybe in a defensive mode. And so it's just been a really long and hard road, and reshaping that's going to be really difficult, but acknowledging that from this consortium, that is an unacceptable place to even begin, is in blame and shame.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. And I think when you're trying to share priorities for the research field, it's important to know the distinction of that. And that was a really important conversation. What were some other points and priorities? I mean, we can't share them exactly, that you think is important to share in this context.
I would say for me, I think my personal feeling of the thing that I wanted to see is being able to navigate feeding differences and disorders in a way that gets early intervention services as quickly as possible with proper training. And I say that as like kind of like my caveat is like, you need to know what you're doing so we don't create harm in the long run. So instead of it just being like, hey, you show up to your doctor and your doctor's like, oh, they'll catch up. They'll eat when they're hungry. Like some of those aspects, like we need to be adjusting wording and adjusting language and really getting this information out there in a digestible way for pediatricians and family doctors, that front line of people. We needed to be really mindful of how we get that information to them from the voices of lived experience with the support of our project team and like experts, so that they understand what we're telling them, but we're still getting our actual view across, if that makes sense. So I think it's important to note that when we're asking people to be vulnerable and to hear what we're saying, we're also being vulnerable and putting that information out there. But we like to see change. We want to see change. And when you're coming at it from a research perspective, which is something we've really learned over these last 2 years, like, you can't just be like, hey, this hurts my feelings when you do this. You have to format it in a way that their brain is going to understand it and take it and research it. And so then you have hard facts that show, hey, this is not working currently. We need to do X, Y, Z to make it more effective and better care for these patients in general. And at that point, we may see a decrease in this rather than a rise because we're getting proper attention where it needs to be.
So we need to put it in front of them using their language.
Yes.
We need to go after the things that matter to the consortium and the lived experience experts.
Yep. And that's a conversation that I feel like we've had in a lot of different meetings, both at the full consortium level and then some of our smaller meetings, which is, we know there's a lot of research out there for a lot of things, but we also know that when we're hearing the lived experience say, that is counter to my experience, or that result was actually traumatizing to me, or that, you know, I would like to contribute in a way that is meaningful for how this research progresses, we need to be part of that solution. And that's what you all are doing in building these priorities for the field of saying, we need to take all of this and research it and, like Haley's saying, get it in the language that makes sense so that we can all be talking the same thing and all be thinking about what's happening long term and how can we all want to build better best practices, but having that shared collaboration will get us there. And words matter and words are a part of that too. And that's, I think, the hardest thing in that language translation, which I think we saw happen in real time during that meeting, was everybody's coming at it from a different perspective in their own language. And how are you like translating that to help each other listen is really hard process. Yeah. So thank you all for kind of being on that journey with us. And I'm so, so excited to see where the paper goes. And as it comes out and as we're able to share and disseminate it more, there's just so much more that is going to happen from this work. And, you know, we're almost 2 years into the consortium. And so you all are thinking about sustainability and legacy. So maybe as we start to close out this meeting, do you want to share a few thoughts about, you know, how you're thinking about what the future of the consortium looks like and the changes you're making and implementing now and how much words matter and what that means for some of the changes for the consortium?
Well, we talk about that feeding is complex and we know that. And therefore, treating is very complex. And we have this amazing opportunity to really do redefining, not just redefining words, but redefining the system, redefining care. And each, I think what makes things so complex is that it's an individualized journey in such a very different way. So you might have a condition that you're treating, and in general, you have kind of this, there's kind of some box, you know, types conditions. You have this condition and this is kind of the treatment. And yes, each person might respond a little bit different to the treatment, but in general, this is where it is. But when you were talking about feeding and eating, and we know through all the trainings, we know through all the work that Feeding Matters has done, that there's many domains that go into that. And that translates into different pieces. But I've heard Rachel say, I am a person. I'm not a domain. Like I am a person. And I see that for my family members. And as we work forward, building on ways that are really the best practices that come from lived experience. And Jacqueline, you said earlier, well, that, you know, this treatment didn't really work that way for my child. I think the challenge of ensuring that we have practices that work, but don't box somebody into something because it is so individualized, is something we're really working hard to overcome and move forward in. And I think that can only come through research that involves lived experience and someone sitting at that table saying, I hear you and I understand that that's generally what we think, but let me tell you how that didn't work, not only for me, but also the 10 people in this consortium that I represent that are also saying, hey, that wasn't my experience either. I think that goes into that piece. And then moving forward, I think this is a legacy opportunity to really show that expertise come from all different angles and directions. And we have this opportunity right now to not just stop with this one paper, not just stop with this idea, but to keep marching forward, to keep asking to be at the table and to say, hey, even though it's a hard table, we're going to sit with you if you'll let us. So please let us sit with you.
I would say as we look forward and move forward, that we need to continue to stay bold and build upon a model, a collaborative model. When we talk about how do we get to these places of shared understanding, that's a process, that's a model. So essentially, we're building that model. And language is important. I'm a big person for language. But I think when you come to research, I think research is the language. I think that is the shared language right there. So
I think as I'm like thinking about the consortium moving forward and like where do we go from here, it's somewhat challenging because we're living it right now, right? So we're working on those next steps right now. We're working on pushing things forward right now. Just not in a way that we can necessarily talk about yet. And so I think for me, the biggest piece that I would like to see the consortium do going forward is just growing a little bit more and like feeling more confident in the research aspect of things. I think we don't want to get too far into it, so we're like in the research brain, but I do think being able to like code switch lens whatever you need to kind of focus more on what research is will be really helpful and empowering in the long run. Because if we're going to be supporting other projects and navigating things like that with researchers, we do need to be able to understand the language that they're saying. And we do need to feel like in the components of research, we're not just somebody that's marking off a checkbox, but absolutely sitting at that table. And so what we did at the research prioritization meeting was model that. And we showed the consortium members through that how to sit at the table and be a voice that can be heard and to be bold, like Christina said. I think it's absolutely important for us to be able to do that going forward with other projects. And as people are transitioning out and transitioning in, maintaining that focus on how do we get the things that need to be researched into researchers' hands so then it can be passed through education, passed through clinical navigation, and into treatment hands, right? So I think that's going to be one of our biggest pieces there.
I think too, when we, that common language piece that you were talking about, Haley and Christina, that you just spoke on too, is going to really come forward, like Rachel's saying, through the research, in that we are redefining so many things right now. As we look forward, thinking about feeding and development, that has not been looked at. That is going to be, that is a huge thing that I think will be powerful and changing in the field. When we think about what is important and what are priorities for growth? What are priorities for thriving? When we start redefining those words in common terms that are that both the professional and the lived experiences can come and agree on, when we find new ways to measure things, when we find new ways to come up with an end result that's actually usable in a clinic setting, those are the things that are really going to begin to or continue to grow and change and make a huge difference in the lives of the many, many children and families that we're trying to touch. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, that's what we're doing. We want something better for the families, for the kids, so that they can thrive in a way that matters to them. And that's what it all comes down to. How is this child, how is this person, how is this family thriving in a way that's healthy and safe and matters to them?
Uh-huh.
That's exactly what it is, Elizabeth, and such a beautiful closeout for this conversation and for this first anniversary episode that we wanted you all to share in this celebration with us, because this work is your work and we only hope to be a place to share your work and to encourage more people to think about it from your perspectives and to be able to be that active listener in this. And for anyone out there who is interested in research, be thinking about the consortium in your projects. They are at a place where they are open with engaging in research, and we'll have more to come on that. But they want to be there at the start of the project, and they don't just want to be the subjects of the research themselves. And so thank you all for just the labor of love that this consortium has been, and what you have built, and the legacy that you continue to build, and the inspiration that you are to the field. So I just feel really honored to be able to work in this space with you all. Thank you for being with us today. Any closing thoughts from anybody or anything that anyone didn't get a chance to share?
I would just say, I mean, from the consortium as a whole, I think I am comfortable and confident in saying that we're grateful for this opportunity. Obviously, it wouldn't have been a thing without you, Jacqueline, and you, Haley, to put it together, and PCORI. So being able to do this and being able to break ground like this and to be a part of it, like, I don't think any of us really knew at the start, like, this was going to be what it is. And so I think we are all very empowered. We've been able to take what we're learning as a consortium back to our like own lived experiences. And then we come back together as a consortium and share that out. So I think we have this nice network now of people who have lived experiences all across the United States that can come together and raise their voices and be loud and be proud and be able to stand up for what we need as people with feeding differences and disorders.
It's
wonderful.
I have to say that my dad is a retired state trooper, and he's always said, Chris, there's power in numbers. And I can say that I feel like I'm part of something really important, but it's not just me. I'm part of a membership, and their support has been empowering to me. And yeah, it is. It's all across the United States, these folks are. And that really, I mean, that's impact. That's impact. So I just have to say that it's been really empowering. And I think that what we have here is something that's super powerful.
Yeah, I'm so grateful and thankful to get to be even a piece of this. It is so humbling to have the opportunity to carry a voice forward for this entire community. It has just been such an honor and a privilege. And while the three of us are here representing, this consortium is full of such amazing people, and their stories are so powerful. Their impact is so strong. They are so brave, the way that they come forward and they share and they show up and the difference that they want to make. And it all continuously comes back to, I want something better, not just for my family, but for those that are coming after. And it brings meaning to a lot of the trauma and the heartache and the pain to know that something better is going to come. So thank you guys so much for letting us be a small part of this.
Thank you for being part of it.
Yeah, thank you for being part of it. Huge thank you to you all, and thank you for being in this space with us, and so excited to see where this all goes. And there's so much more to come, and we'll promise to update everybody along the way. So thanks, everyone. Have a great one.